So, I've been asked to give class this morning, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 11, The Childhood Pastimes of Lord Krishna. So, thank you for asking me to come and speak. I'm not a scholar. I'll just see what we can come up with. So, I was asked to speak from text number 28 through to 32. So we've got some of it there. So, oh, so that's 31 to 32. I got a text asking me to speak from 28. Did you cover 28? No, purpose. Just one very short purport. Yeah. So I'll just chant the Sanskrit and. So I'll read this translation after we've gone through the other previous one, starting on text 28. Translation: between Nandeshvara and Mahavan is a place named Vrindavan. This place is very suitable because it is lush with grass, plants, and creepers for the cows and other animals. It has nice gardens and tall mountains, and is full of facilities for the happiness of all the gopas and the gopis and our animals. Short purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada says, Vrindavan is situated between Nandeshvara and Mahavan. Formerly, the cowherd men had shifted to Mahavan, but still there were disturbances. Therefore, the cowherd men selected Vrindavan, which was between the two villages, and decided to go there. Text 29. Therefore, let us immediately go today. There is no need to wait any further. If you agree to my proposal, let us prepare all the bullock carts and put the cows in front of us, and let us go there. Text 30. Upon hearing this advice from Upananda, the cowherd men unanimously agreed. Very nice, they said. Very nice. Thus, they sorted out their household paraphernalia, placing their clothes and other paraphernalia on the carts, and immediately started for Vrindavan. And today's verse that we're reading, keeping all the old men, women, children, and household paraphernalia on the bullock carts, and keeping all the cows in front, the cowherd men picked up their bows and arrows with great care and sounded bugles made of horn. O King Parikshit, in this way, with bugles vibrating all around, the cowherd men, accompanied by their priests, began their journey. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this connection, it is to be noted that although the inhabitants of Gokula were mostly cowherd men and cultivators, they knew how to defend themselves from danger and how to give protection to the women, the old men, the cows, and the children, as well as the Brahminical Purohitas. The Brahminical Purohitas. Amaginati Mirandasya Janandana Salakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manabhishtang Shtapatam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamiyam Tadati Svapadantikam. So this is the move to Vrindavan, which has been recommended by the, after discussion amongst the elder gopas and instigated by the eldest, most experienced gopa, Upananda. Anyone here moved house recently? Anyone moved house recently? No? Anyone changed rooms recently in the ashram? No? Anyone been on holiday recently? Anyone packed their bags and gone on holiday recently? No? Okay. Well, this is quite remarkable. This advice is there. We have to leave, pack up and go. because Krishna's in danger. This is a very inauspicious place. So many problems and have come. Krishna, his life is in danger. So let us leave this place and go to somewhere safe. Because as it turns out, Vrindavan, because being Krishna's own abode, still it isn't free from demons. So wherever the Lord goes, there's always the elements who want to disturb his mission and even kill him personally. So this move, within a very short time, one day, they packed up their bags and they're setting off on with the bullock carts. Now, I've moved house a couple of times, flat house, whatever, and it takes a bit more than a day. Now, for the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and those who are more renounced, they can pack up the things in probably half an hour, if that. But most people, most householders, it takes a while. People often spend weeks planning their move. Sometimes people have more than one big removal lorry. But here, very short time, they've given everything up. Whatever land they're cultivating, they're leaving it behind. Whatever houses they have, they're leaving that behind. But the necessary paraphernalia, which it mentions in the texts, clothing, various household paraphernalia, pots and pans, the big brass, what do they call those, for storing grain, those great, great big pots. They stack them up one above the other to keep the mice and the rats out. All the things for household paraphernalia, all the cooking paraphernalia, bits and pieces, all on bullock carts. So we can't imagine how big this procession was across the land of Vrindavan to go to the actual Vrindavan itself. Many years ago, when I was in the Paris temple, I mentioned this in a previous class some time ago, but there was a very nice film. It was made by some French filmmaker, and he'd found a beautiful Indian miniature painting, one of the styles of Indian miniature painting, which was depicting this very pastime of Nanda Maharaj and all the gopis leaving for Vrindavan. And many, many carts, and all the gopis walking, and all the ladies on their carts, and all the cows up in front. And the filmmaker, he was just playing some Indian sitar music, but he was very close with the camera, very close up to the illustration, which must have been very, very big, because he very slowly panned across. And with the music and the sound effects, it looked like there was a whole procession going on, all the paraphernalia, it was very, very sweet. Back in the 70s, there wasn't so much visual culture in terms of films. So it was a real treat. These days, we're spoilt with video, and we have our little mobile, this and that. There's so much visual culture, although there's probably less paintings going on. But this is the idea of culture to celebrate, especially the spiritual aspect. So now, I've got a question for you. What is it about this last verse particularly? Keeping all the old men, women, children, and household paraphernalia on the bullock carts, keeping all the cows in front, the cowherd men picked up their bows and arrows with great care and sounded bugles made of horn. O King Parikshit, in this way, with bugles vibrating all around, the cowherd men, accompanied by their priests, began their journey. So why is there such a concern for these various categories of persons? Old men, women, children, household paraphernalia, and cows, and Brahmins. The household paraphernalia you can leave aside. It's the old men, the women, the children, the cows, and the Brahmins. So what's going on here? Why is it mentioned? They need to be protected. Okay. So you're saying protection? These categories of they need to be protected. Any Anything else on that? Well, we'll take it a bit further. Yes, Phil. Worship the Brahmins? Yeah. What about worshipping the cows? What about worshipping the old men? And the ladies? And the children? Yes, protection. Now, why are these things protected? Okay, they need protection, one. Any advance on that? They're very important for society. Anything else? The mothers, one, the cows are mothers, and the mothers are mothers. Yeah? One of the kinds of mothers, yeah. What else? Anything else? The children of the future, yes. The old give wisdom, yes. The cow gives milk for the brain. I'm repeating for those who are not here, who can, because they can't hear the response. Anything else? Sorry? Yes, we worship paraphernalia. We use the paraphernalia to worship Krishna. Now, that's not in terms of living entity, but we do protect. We try to protect that paraphernalia which is used in Krishna's worship. Now, one word describes this whole the whole spectrum. And it's a broad, I would say, wealth. This is the wealth of society. You protect your wealth, isn't it? Protect your wealth. Now, different categories have different types of persons, have a different conception of what is wealth. According to the modes of nature, you'll consider one thing to be wealth that another person might not consider to be so important. But this is wealth. We know that cows are wealth and land is wealth. But actually they live here, the inhabitants of the Vrindavan, the gopis and gopis, the whole society, the whole village is leaving one tract of land for another. So they've not given up wealth, they've taken leaving one tract of land for another tract of land, but they're taking the mobile wealth. You can't move land around, but you can move cows around. You can move grains around. We can be almost sure that there was a stock of grain taken, that they carried also some stock of grain with them on the bullock carts. But it must have been an enormous procession. A lot of people, thousands and thousands and thousands of cows. So Prabhupada mentions here, in fact, Prabhupada doesn't say very much in the purports here. He doesn't go into detail. He doesn't get lost in the detail. We can get lost in the detail, which I generally do. But Prabhupada says in his purport, in this connection, it is to be noted that although the inhabitants of Vrindavan were mostly cowherd men and cultivators, in other words, they were growing crops as well, vegetables and grains, etc., still they knew how to defend themselves from danger and how to give protection to the women, the old men, the cows and the children, and the Brahmins. So they took up bows and arrows. So it's the duty of the different categories of human being, in terms of dharma and their duty, to protect those things which they're responsible for. The Brahmins protect wisdom. They protect the society from being waylaid, from going off on the wrong path. Their advice is very important for the Kshatriyas. Prabhupada explains in one of his purports, I've got lots of printouts here, probably not read it all, but Prabhupada says that the kings were not autocratic despots. They took advice from the Brahmin. Some situation, the king would call his Brahmin advisors and say, what do we do here? He was open to the advice. In fact, the Kshatriyas depended upon the advice of the Brahmins. They weren't despots. They weren't fascists. They weren't, of course, some were, yes. Some of the Hiranyakashipus and Ravanas and Kamsas, they wouldn't listen. So the Brahmins were valued in society, and the Brahmins were valued for their knowledge. The wealth of the Brahmins is their knowledge, their renunciation, their self-control, their honesty. Each type of avarna has its particular wealth. So it's not material wealth that the Brahmins value or that they're appreciated for. You don't find accounts saying, well, he's a poor Brahmin. Rubbish. No. He's appreciated for his austerity and self-control. The Kshatriyas, they're appreciated and they value strength of arms, their valor, their bravery. They protect society. And amongst Brahmins, their sense of appreciation of each other is though they're looking for valor, bravery, generosity. And then the Vaishyas, their appreciation is of wealth. They appreciate wealth. Whether it's hard cash, or whether it's land, or the cows, this is real wealth. And what are the Sudras renowned for? Expertise. They're expert in manipulating the different grosser elements in the service of the other varnas. They're not self-motivated. They're not self-motivated. They need guidance, and they need some jurisdiction to work within. It might be pottery, it might be wood carving, it might be dance, theater, music, service to the other varnas. And the wealth of the Shudra is loyalty. Loyalty. And just read a little bit here, Prabhupada says, talking about wealth. Prabhupada says, so actually human opulence means not these tin cars. Anyone got a fancy car? Any gold-plated cars here? Anyone got a Merc? No. Keep it simple. There's some people on the planet with a lot of money. Some of them actually, there's a few have well over 1,000 cars. Some of these very rich oil barons, they have a lot of cars. Prabhupada says, so actually human opulence does not mean tin cars. Once it is dashed with another car, rather mean crash, it is finished, no value. Human opulence means that society must have enough gold, enough jewelry, enough silk, enough grains, enough milk, enough vegetables like that. That is opulent. That is opulence. Formerly, a person was considered rich by these two things, danyena, danavan, how much grain stock he has got at home, a big, big barn filled with grains. Still, in India, if I'm going to give my daughter to some family, to see the family's opulence, I go to see the house. And if there are many, many barns stocked with grains and many cows, then it is very good. Anyone here got a barn full of grain? Anyone got a stock of grain in their kitchen cupboard? Anyone got enough food in the kitchen cupboard to last them a couple of months if the supermarkets are out of stock? Ooh, we're very short-sighted. Yeah. Any international incident or something, and we're all going to starve unless you keep enough food in your larder. We don't have barns these days, generally speaking. Or keep it in your larder, or not even in your fridge, but some dried grain, enough to keep you going at least 6 months. But nobody does. Why? Well, could go to the supermarket. And the food in the supermarket is coming from Kenya, it's coming from Spain, it's coming from all over the place, coming from India, South America. But where's the local wealth? It's very limited. The manor, we have the cows. That's the wealth of the manor. And there's also some fields under cultivation. But we don't have a big stock at the manor. If there's a big problem, you guys in the ashram, ladies in the ashram, ooh, be eating nettles, which are very nutritious, by the way. Also wealth, that's knowledge of wealth. Wealth is knowledge. You should know nettles are very, very nutritious. More nutritious than many vegetables. and talk about vitamin C, you'll find more vitamin C in a blackberry than you will in the blueberries or the gojo berries, all this stuff that people pay through the nose for, these fancy berries coming from Hawaii and various places. Blackberries are very high in vitamin C. So knowledge is knowing also what's local in terms of eating. Knowledge is on every level. And the Brahmins knew all these things. The Brahmins weren't just experts in Shastra. They had practical knowledge. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jaya. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Padaya Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swanta Namaya Namastaya Saraswati Deya Kuruvana. So a Brahmin is rich with knowledge. So Prabhupada goes on here. It says, a man is considered to be rich when he has got enough quantity of grains. Enough quantity of, I mean to say, number. Enough numbers of cows. Just like Maharaj Nanda, the foster father of Krishna. He was keeping, any guesses to how many cows Nanda Maharaj had? What does Prabhupada say? Huh? 800,000? 900,000, yeah. Give or take a few. It's a bull, round figure. 900,000 cows. And he was rich man. He was Maharaj, king. But see the behavior. His beloved son, Krishna and Balaram, he has entrusted to take care of the calves or cows. Go in the forest. He is well dressed with ornament and nice dress, everything. We were reading about that just in previous verses. You know, Krishna's playing with his friends, but he's covered in dirt, but still he's wearing gold ornaments and nice cloth. All the cowherd boys, they are very rich. They have got enough grains and enough milk. Naturally, they will be rich. But not that the cows and the calves would be taken care of by some hired servant. No. They would take care himself. In other words, the king's son, Maharaj Nanda, the son of the king, is looking after cows. He's herding them in the forest. So it's hands-on. Hands-on management. Hands-on looking after the cows. Now, interesting, Prabhupada says, that was children's sport, to go to the forest, take the cows and calves, and carry some tiffin, a little lunch pack. Eat there, dance there, play there, and again come home in the evening. Then they would take bath and change their dress and take their meals and immediately go to sleep. This was the boys, the children's engagement. See how they would grow healthy, because they go outside and play and work, and very happily they enjoy the company. And these days, what do children have? We talk about protection of children, but children don't even have a place to stay, to play. Especially if you live in the city, it's not safe to go outside on the street. Don't they make some playground with swings and slides and this and that? They have to put a fence around it. And only mothers and children are allowed inside. Because as people in society are so untrustworthy, there's fear for the welfare of the children. So then the child grows up, and he goes to school. And these days, they're bringing in legislation. Even by the age of 7, the child is receiving sex education. So how is that protecting children? Children are not protected. Women are not protected. The cows aren't protected. The old people aren't protected. And there's no Brahmins to protect. The business of the Kshatriyas is to nurture the spiritual, to protect the spiritual side of society, along with the vulnerable. And that's the gate, that's the, you say, litmus test. That's the way to gauge a society, how it protects the vulnerable. That's civilization. Does this culture protect the vulnerable? If it doesn't, it's an animal civilization. I was just looking at the abortion rates. The children, the child in the womb isn't protected. There's legislation to make it legal to kill the child in the womb at later and later stages in its development. There's some, according to world statistics, there's between 45 and 50 million abortions every year. That's more than a third of the birth rate. The global birth rate's about 150 million a year. So we talk about longevity. You've got to take that 45, 50 million, include that in the calculation of people's lifespan. So people, those who make it into the material, into the world, may live a little bit longer in certain places, but how many actually don't even make it? This is the Kali Yuga. It's a very nasty time. Very, very nasty time to be. There's no protection. There's no protection in this age. And worst of all, there's no protection for the spiritual quest of the individual. Now, we're very fortunate at the present time in the West, here, especially here in England, there's no harassment for spiritual societies. Some countries there is. We're very fortunate here at the moment, but never take it for granted. We can never take it for granted. We have to, what I say, talking in agricultural terms, make hay while the make hay while the sun shines. So there's a favorable time. So devotees, we can go out on the streets and distribute books. Some countries you can't do that. Devotees can go out and chant on the street, not get arrested, like we did in the 70s, getting arrested all the time. Who's been out on Harinam, Saturday night Harinam recently? Anyone? Is that all? Two or three? Yeah? So try and come out and hurry now. Either Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening. It's an education. Especially when you see the response of people on the street. People are eager for spiritual things. They're eager for it. I asked Vishwambar a couple of years ago. I said, you've been doing books for 20 years. And the whole world is getting so degraded. Are people still interested in these books? He said, more than ever. People are eager, they're hungry for the spiritual side of life. Because it's not protected, it's stamped out. Stamped out. The material education doesn't give them that. We're all told we've all come from monkeys, and many people still are. We've all evolved from primordial slime. There's no soul. Just enjoy your senses. You go into the shopping center in Watford, into. Everywhere, you're just assaulted by this urge to enjoy your senses. And so much, they use the sexual imagery to get you to buy a telephone or a television. It's crazy, crazy, crazy. Imagine being a little child, because you've got your own kids, some of you. You go into this, and what are you being assaulted by? Your whole conception of life is being... you're being brainwashed. You're being indoctrinated with the mainstream culture, which is consume. Spend money, work hard, spend money. You only live once. It's a very tragic time. But we're fortunate. We still have the freedom. We still have freedom to chant on the street. We still have freedom to distribute books. We still have freedom to have a community like Bhaktivedanta Manor. But that's not always the case. So I urge you to play kartals in kirtan. Only one pair of kartals here during the Bhagavatam Jayarada Madhava prayers. And to come on Harinam at some point during the week, somewhere, and distribute books. And I would say especially Saturday night Harinam, because you see the response of people on the street, and it's very, very encouraging. And I say, it gets better every week, and somehow or other it does. It seems to be actually 50 yards down the street. The Harinam's party is here. 50 people are already dancing down the street. Hey, it's the Haris. They don't necessarily know the words, but people are appreciative. I was at the Body, Mind, Spirit Festival of the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and people love the kirtan. They want to hear. They want to know. People want to know. So the duty of the Brahmins is to disseminate this knowledge, to give this knowledge to others in whatever way we can. whatever way we can. You strain our, Prabhupada used to say, strain our brains to give this information to others. Whatever angle we're coming from, whether it's the scientific preaching, or whether it's the mantra lounge, or the kirtan london, or the book distribution, or the massive prasadam distribution, or the festival programs, so many different ways to cultivate people, to give them access to this vital, this life-saving process of Krishna consciousness. And that will protect ourselves, because if we endeavor to make this available to others, we're given Krishna's full protection. Full protection to do this. Confirmed there. So this is the real wealth in society, protection of those who are vulnerable. And you all made some very nice points before, why these individuals are so important. So just a couple of minutes left. Any questions or points anyone wants to make?